All right, we are into hour two of the program on a Flames game day. The Flames and the Vegas Golden Knights. Game two of a four-game homestand for the Flames. They're looking to end a three-game losing streak. The return of Noah Hanifin. Dustin Wolf gets the start in goal. Nikita Ochocek gets his spot on a top six defensive pairing with Braden Pahal. Lots to look forward to on tonight's game. 6 o'clock, Flames warm up with Steinberg. 7 o'clock, Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson have the call right here on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We'll have more on the Flames coming up in just a little bit, but right now it's Logan Gordon, Julian McKenzie along with you in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. Worried about radon? They install custom mitigation systems to reduce your risk. To find out more, visit dlbasementsystems.com. for a free estimate. We're kicking off the hour with one of our favorite chats of the week. Very happy to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcome in our pal from MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast. Adnan Virk joins us this Thursday. AV, how you doing, pal?
Logo, great to be with you. And Julian, as always, happy Thursday. I'm sure we got a lot to talk about here because there's no shortage of topics in the world of sports and in the world of movies. A little Oscars recap, whenever you like.
Yes, we've got it all planned out. We're excited to talk some Oscars with you and jump in. But I'm just curious to see how your spring training experience has been. We didn't talk last week. We were super busy here with trade deadline action. The Flames were making a lot of moves, so we didn't check in with you last week. And before we had talked, you were going out on assignment with MLB Network to all these different stops around Major League Baseball. And I've been following you on Instagram, and you got all these great photos. Tell us some stories of your adventures the last couple of weeks at spring training.
Yeah, it was fantastic, man. You and Julian know this. Whenever you talk to the players, generally they're always great. The challenge sometimes can be the PR team and schedules and all the rest of that. So we were really fortunate in that. When you're there at spring training, it's like, listen, these games, unless you're fighting for a roster spot, do not have much meaning. So we're there for MLB Network. Obviously, we are the league network. We have a little bit of cachet. Mm-hmm. So everybody treated us great. So much so that even the Rays, I probably felt way too comfortable and just literally went in the clubhouse where the guys were eating and just helped myself. Logan, you know one thing about me? I can never turn down some watermelon.
No,
I was starving.
That's fair.
And I was walking around. I go, you know what? Is anyone going to say anything if I take any food? I'm like, probably not. It's March 12th. I'm in Port Charlotte with the Rays. I'm like, I'm just going to take some watermelon. And I swear, one of the people kind of eyed me, and I thought I was going to get in trouble, but it was more like, have some more. I'm like, great, I'll have some eggs as well, thanks. A little llama would be lovely, thank you. A little watermelon, a little cantaloupe down there in Florida, it was great. So you guys know what it's like. Normally you're in a clubhouse, you can't even take a double bubble without somebody giving you a stink eye. Here, I'm like, oh, help myself. I'm one of the players. It's all good. Lego Network, we're all friends here. Come on.
It was great, man. I was about to say, if you have that going on and that type of cachet, we might need you to rank the different food spreads for each team out at spring training.
Yeah, thanks. I only did it with Tampa, Julian, but yeah, I was hoping Philly would have a cheesesteak, but I would have gone all in. Very specific to the areas I was at. But Red Sox, I was happy to see my buddy Alex Cora. Of course, AC is the best, although we got there terrible timing. We talked with him, and then the news came out that Lucas Giolito was probably done for the year. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, we were so excited for the one guy to talk to. That is an example where spring training, everyone is not always in a good mood. I hope there's not always spring eternal, but I do love Vaughn Grissom, the young player they got in the Chris Sale trade. He's a good kid. Twins were phenomenal. Let me tell you something, A-plus from the PR department and all those players. Correa's a great guy. Buxton was good. Pablo Lopez might be the nicest guy in the world. Royce Lewis is unbelievable. And I made a point of telling Mitch, the PR guy, said, I've got to meet Eddie Julian because I'm Canadian. We've got to have a little Canadian talk. So
yes.
Eddie Julian, great guy. We started talking with Josh Naylor, Bo Naylor, Abraham Toro, all the Canadians in baseball. Got a picture with him. Awesome. I asked one of the guys, too. I go, is he really funny? They go, I don't know if he's funny, but a lot of the guys laugh at him. I go, okay, I'm not sure if that's really an indictment of French Canada in general.
Oh, my God.
That's okay. But yeah, Eddie, a bit of a prankster, or people are just laughing at him. Either way, he's a good part of that Twins team. Rays, Rosemena does not speak English, but thankfully the translator does, and he was great. Rosemena's Jack. Pete Fairbanks was really funny because I've always wanted to say to him, and I said this to him off when I did it in the interview. I said, every time I see you, as an old Hollywood fan, I'm only thinking of one thing. Do you know what that is? He said, of course, Douglas. Douglas Fairbanks is one of the great silent film stars of all time. Mask of Zorro, Robin Hood. So I said, I always want to ask him, is there any family relation? He's like, no. And I said, the second question is, when's the last time somebody referenced Douglas Fairbanks to you? He started laughing. He goes, well, it's been a while. He goes, when I was younger, maybe my parents' friends may have known, but yeah, nobody comes walking up to me, hey, Douglas Fairbanks. He was big in the 1930s. Any relation? But he's got a great dry sense of humor. He's great. And then the Phillies, we capped it off. I mean, saved the best for last. Yes. Bryce Harper had not been talking to much of the media, but we got every major star, and they were all phenomenal. Trey Turner is a great guy. I asked him, I said, having an unusual first name, how often does your name get screwed up? And he laughed. He goes, still happens. I go, come on. Someone's still calling you Treya when they see your name. He's like, yeah, I went to a car wreck the other day. Treya Turner? I'm like, no, it's Trey, because I think it's pretty straightforward, but this is just how it is. Schwarber, you won't find a better guy in the game. Wheeler was like, I'm a big fan of your work. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm calling Zach Wheeler when it's Cy Young now after that. You butter me up. We're boys for life. Aaron Nola. And then, of course, my favorite is Bryce Harper, because he's, you know, the straw that stirs the drink. Two-time MVP. And we got along great. The best thing is that we started talking Eagles and Flyers. I didn't want to tell him I'm not a Phillies guy, but I said I have great reverence for the city of Philadelphia and their sports teams, particularly the Eagles and Flyers. So normally I thought he would talk Eagles, and he mentioned it kind of briefly. He's like, oh, listen, Jalen Hurts, yeah, love those guys. Goes, but honestly, we're going to talk Flyers. Surprising year so far. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. All right, let's talk Flyers. And he said his son is a huge Flyers guy, locked in. I think he's like 5 years old. He loves Konechny. He loves Konechny. All in on Couturier. He loves Tortorella. I'm like, oh, my God.
So, wow.
Bryce Harper and his son, huge into the Flyers, and I said, you have a future Broad Street bully. I can give you my Hexall jersey from years ago. You had a good laugh. So it was an awesome time, man. Honestly, it was beautiful weather. Oh, here's the best part, of course. I got to mention this. I didn't realize in relation how close Dunedin was. And as a kid, of course, we all grew up Dunedin, home of the Blue Jays, blah, blah, blah. So when I got to Clearwater, I was working my way up the coast. So I went to Fort Myers, Boston, and Minnesota, Port Charlotte, Tampa, and then Clearwater. And then someone had said to me, oh, Dunedin's close by. I'm like, really? Like, it's 15 minutes away. So I finished up at the Phillies, got in the car, and I drove up 15 minutes just to watch Jays Yankees. And I got to tell you, for all the Blue Jays fans out there, you got to go. I mean, that is a beautiful little park in Dunedin. And I think for years it was kind of a beat-up town, but it's been revitalized. I texted our buddy Arash Madani. He told me, no, you have to go. And he told me some place to go. I didn't end up going, but apparently a great peel and eat shrimp. I can't remember the name right now, but it's famous in Dunedin. I waited for the commercial break, went and saw Dan Shulman, said hello to him, met Joe Siddall for the first time. So it was great, man. That Jays Park is awesome. And it looked pretty much like a sellout. Think about it, for spring training, the Yankees, Blue Jays, but it's gorgeous. And Shulman told me, he goes, you got to go to the training complex, which is a few miles away. He said, that they've completely redone. He said, Shapiro's done an unbelievable job with what he's done there in Toronto. So it was great, man. Got a little Jays. And how about this? And I went to the Jays store to pick up some Jay stuff for my kids, and one of the guys recognized me. Kind of made a joke, like, oh, yeah,
no,
I'm representing your roots. And I go, okay. He's like, yeah. And he goes, oh, my name's Shelby. I'm from Oakville. I'm like, all right. And then it was funny. He goes, what happened to you? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I used to watch you all the time on the screen. Like, well, what happened to you? I'm like, what do you mean? You think I'm like, I work in real estate now? I'm like, I worked at ESPN for 9 years. I worked at MLB Network. Oh, okay, that's great. Like, you just think my career completely flamed out.
Thought you vanished off the face of the earth.
Right. You were a big deal in Toronto, but I don't know what the hell happened to you. No, I'm still a big deal, buddy. I promise you.
I love that you were confident enough to be like, I'm still a big deal, buddy.
Yeah, hey, whoa.
Hey, you know.
The fall of Adnan Virk has been greatly exaggerated okay?
Come on.
ESPN, MLB Network, we're talking pretty similar here. We're not that far away.
Still down to earth after all that.
Yeah, I'm like, I know it's not the score, okay? I know it's not the score. Come on, we're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm not surprised the good things about Dunedin. They've spent a ton of money there, Virk. I think it was a big reason, too, that George Springer and some of the guys were there, because they said, and I'm sure you've talked about this with players before, they spent so much time at the spring training facilities at the beginning of the year, and those training facilities, like, it's a big part of going to places as a free agent or as a player now to know that you've got all the right facilities and they've got you set up for a long time, because spring training is not just a couple of weeks. Like, you're there for a long time.
Yeah, Logo, so much so that Tom Verducci, when there was all that fervor around Ohtani signing with Toronto, Tom was saying one of the biggest reasons why is because Ohtani is a training nut. He said all that guy likes to do is training. It's why we don't know much about him, right? Does he like going to the movies? What kind of music does he like? Is he a foodie? No, Ohtani just wants to play baseball and train. So he said, well, the biggest ways Shapiro and Atkins were selling him on Toronto is how good that spring training complex is. Because you're right, you're there for 6 weeks, if not longer. Like, you know, minimum you're there from Feb 14, the season starts March 28th, but guys might show up early, get some extra work in. So Yeah, I hope to get down there at another time and actually see what the proper facilities look like. Because you're right, that's a big-time investment from the team. And clearly could be a way to attract Blue Jays. And at the very least, it makes your players happy. They want to be in an environment where they feel good, get the season started off on the right note. So I think it's A-plus work by the Jays management.
Did you get to see Joey Votto while you were around the Toronto Blue Jays?
I didn't, but it's funny, Julian. That was the day that it broke. So literally, I was chatting with Shulman and met Joe, and then I walked outside, checked my phone, and Joey Votto minor league deal. I'm like, oh my God, what are the odds? So yeah, I wish I could have said he was there lurking, and he came out, they unveiled him, but didn't end up getting to see him there. But excited about the news. I would say cautiously optimistic. Listen, at the very least, as a PR move, it's of course a stroke of genius. Who doesn't love Joey Votto? He's the second greatest position player of all time behind Larry Walker. He's going to be a future Hall of Famer. Now, he hasn't done much the last few years, which is why there was not much of a market for him, which is why it's only a minor league deal. But I will say, even last year, he still has some power. Like, he still has some pop in that bat. So, honestly, let's hope he makes the team first and foremost. That's he can true. Be a good left-handed bat. You pair him, you know, him and Vogelbach have a couple options there at DH. Maybe Votto can be a guy 250, 300 at bats, you know, part-time duty, hit you 15, 20 home runs and be a really good veteran leader for that team. Like, that would not be the worst thing in the world. I don't think he's an everyday guy anymore, but at the age of 40, the fact that Votto could be playing for his hometown team, who's going to resist that? At the very least, his Instagram is going to be on fire. So yes. That's great news to the social media.
I love the tweet where he put up where he's sitting down on a park bench and he's all like missing ball. I think the Montreal Expos Twitter account, there's one out there. They tried to hop it on that fun too. But I've been into Joey Votto's personality and we've seen him do a little bit of broadcasting. I think with Rogers, actually, I know it's good that we're thinking of the now and he's able to play on MLB team. I can't wait to see what's next for him when he does decide it's time to hang it up. I'm curious if you've seen any of his broadcasting chops or what do you think of his personality or if he's someone that maybe the MLB network should take a phone call on.
Oh, I'm with you, Julian. What happens is a lot of these guys, if they're not necessarily interested in broadcasting, because they've made enough money. You know what I mean? Like if you've made as much money as Joey Votto has, like there's really no eagerness to go work unless you really do genuinely like media or like talking baseball. So Adam Wainwright is one of our hires this year for MLB Network, and this guy literally is just coming off the field a year ago, 200 wins, all the rest of it. He's going to do some stuff with us. I believe he's doing some stuff with Fox, maybe Turner as well. So Adam Wainwright made plenty of money, but clearly he likes television, likes being on TV, likes broadcast, or is at least entertained by the idea, so he's going to do some stuff with us. So there used to be a thought that the guys that did it needed the money, quite simply. And now it's like, no, if you actually just like broadcasting, it's cool. And I'm with you on Votto. I love the fact that he's refreshing. He's honest. He's genuinely funny. He's quirky in that Canadian way. Got that great deadpan. So, I mean, there's not many people who I would trust more on the science of hitting than Joey Votto. I mean, he's Ted Williams-esque in that respect. So, yeah, if he has any interest in doing broadcasting and showing his personality, I'm sure we'd love to have him.
You mentioned the Giolito injury. I'm curious how big of a hole you think the Yankees have now with that injury to Gerrit Cole?
Oh, it's a heart attack logo. Like, I was so wrapped up in the Oscar stuff, I really didn't know a ton about it. Somebody had said Cole got hurt, and then I was working last night, and we had John Heyman on, one of our MLB Network insiders, and I realized the severity of this. Like, that is an absolute heart attack for my buddy Aaron Boone, because John Heyman's report was he's going to do nothing for 1 to 2 months, wait for the inflammation to subside, and then we'll see. But quite simply, what is causing the elbow inflammation? Like, so far, the first MRI revealed nothing, but is there a tear in his UCL, and does that mean then he has to undergo surgery? Now, there have been guys who have had UCL tears who kept pitching. Tanaka, very famously, everybody didn't have Tommy John, kept going. Andy Pettit one time pitched with a tear in his elbow. So it's not all doom and gloom, but it's definitely concerning. This guy had 15 wins a season ago, over 200 strikeouts, over 200 innings, 2.63 ERA. He's been the best pitcher in baseball for me the last couple of years. So best case scenario, 1 to 2 months, he just does nothing. Let's just hope the inflammation goes down, his elbow's okay, and he starts pitching again. He'll need a couple weeks to ramp up. So to me, realistically, best case is you're looking at mid-June, maybe more like Canada Day. That's best case. And the worst case, I don't even want to say it out loud. If they go in there, wait for the inflammation to go down, all of a sudden the MRI reveals a tear, then you could have a Giolito type situation. Worst case, Tommy John, oh my God, he's gone for a year and a half. So he's the one guy. I mean, I honestly, fellas, I would argue he's the most irreplaceable guy in the sport. I really would. Mm-hmm. Like, if the Dodgers, you lose Mookie Betts, he's incredible, but you have other stars, right? Freeman, Ohtani, et cetera. Braves with Acuna. Like, most of those teams have other stars. Even the Yankees now. If Judge goes down, like, well, you have Soto. Gleyber Torres had a great spring. Hopefully Stanton can bounce back. Volpe's look good. Cole's the one guy. You go, dude, that's a big-time drop-off if there's no Gerrit Cole in that rotation. I think Stroman has a good season, but Rodon has been really inconsistent, hasn't looked great this spring. You're counting on him as a number two, making $25 million a year. That's a little dicey. You got the likes of, obviously, Nestor Cortes and Clark Schmidt, but I tell you, man, if the Yankees better be praying it's only a couple months for Gerrit Cole. That is truly the best-case scenario.
We still have some Oscar questions for you, but I do want to ask this other baseball question, unless Logan's already asked it. But do you have a preseason MLB World Series pick?
Well, I'm doing the Dan Plesac rule, former Blue Jay, and, of course, my colleague and buddy, MLB Network, which is that when you go to certain camps, you just fall in love with the teams. So my pick, because I visited them, is Phillies Twins. How about that? Phillies are going to win the World Series in six, which other people are calling the Phillies. My friend Buster Olney from ESPN, I've seen some other people, so that's not a crazy pick.
No.
But I'm going Twins, just because of how much I love Rocco Baldelli. He name-checked me. Couldn't have been nicer. Royce Lewis is now following me on Instagram, so I'm going to be the one guy. Listen, if the D-backs can make the World Series with 84 wins, why not the Twins? They're going to win the Central with 87 wins. If Buxton can stay healthy, I love Lopez. Yoan Duran's a great closer. Let's call it upset. How about Phillies Twins World Series?
Man, that's the one thing about this sport, man. Like the Diamondbacks and the Rangers, they weren't even playoff teams the year before. And then they end up as the World Series matchup. That's how unpredictable this sport is. You could just come out of nowhere and end up being this team in the World Series competing. That's what's just so unpredictable and so lovable about this sport.
I'm with you, J-Mac, because in the past, you see, you have to win the division. Now you go, why? Like, now the goal is win 85, 86, 87 wins, at least in the National League. In the AL, okay, win 90 wins. It's more competitive. But after that, let's just be healthy and go and get it, because as far as being a one seed that has not so far favored that team. So let's just get in the dance. And just like March Madness, which is right around the corner, create some chaos and hope for an upset. That's what all these baseball teams are thinking.
Before we get to some movie questions, Saquon, an Eagle.
Yes, he is.
Busy week here in NFL free agency, and the Eagles make a big splash. You got to love taking that from a rival team, hey?
I was blindsided, Logan. I was absolutely stunned. I'm like, wait, what? And I was like, as you said, stealing it from the Giants feels great. Then I looked at the contract. I think, well, that's pretty good. It wasn't like a massive deal. It's like, hey, we'll give you $12 million for each of the next couple of seasons. And if you perform as you will, then you'll get even more money. So it really is a win. The Giants, obviously, are the big losers in this. The Eagles get a significant upgrade. And I say that knowing DeAndre Swift was a Pro Bowl running back a season ago. But Barkley's a difference maker, man. I think you look at any list of the best running backs in football, he's clearly on that list, especially when healthy. And, you know, that gives a new dimension to this offense. With a new offensive coordinator now, that takes a little bit of heat off Jalen Hurts. I've argued, especially last season, Sirianni was way too pass dependent. So I love the Barkley sign. Go, oh, good, let's go back to running the football, which they do have a premier offensive line, even with Jason Kelce retiring. So it's going to be weird. There's a leadership void now. Kelce retiring, Fletcher Cox, one of my all-time favorite Eagles, he's retiring. But I do love that Barkley move, man. And as you said, sticking it to the Giants and Saquon taking shots at Tiki Barber, that's the kind of stuff I love.
He didn't love Tiki taking a shot at him on the way out. He was, don't be smiling when you see me. Don't be buddy-buddy with me. And I love that, man. Hey, and good for Saquon, if that's how he feels, man. You're not going to make any friends going from New York to Philly. You might as well just burn all the bridges behind you, I guess.
Yeah, just own it. Like, yeah. I think Tiki, of course, is being tongue-in-cheek, and I haven't followed it. But you're right. Good for Saquon. But hey, we're not friends here. Like, well, let's be clear. You're on the enemy side. I don't like you. I don't care for you. I'm going to beat you guys. Let's go.
I'll throw some breaking news your way, NFL, and get your reaction to it. Commanders trade Sam Howell to the Seahawks.
Wow.
So Sam Howell, when I told you guys that Eagles game I went to last year with my kids, it was October 1st. The weather was unseasonably warm. It was like plus 23 and sunny. And Sam Howell looked like Joe Montana. So after that game, I go, this guy's unbelievable. He almost robbed the Commanders of the win. As a matter of fact, allegedly Riverboat Ron has gave up that label because he did not go for it. The Commanders could have won the game on the road and Philly didn't. But I thought Howell was pretty good. At least the two games he played against the Eagles, he played great. So I'm curious what the thought process is there for Seattle. Still, he'll challenge Geno a little bit, but I think he's got some promise. Got
to be a QB at two now for Washington, right?
Like I thought that was going to be the case for them in the draft anyway.
But I'm surprised that you don't have a safety option. You know what I mean? Like I hate Virk. There's nothing and you and me have talked about this before. It's Daniel Jones in New York all over again. You have no options around him. Bryce Young in Carolina last year. Why aren't you good? Yeah. Well, okay, your O-line stinks. Adam Thielen's 40.
Hey, they got Deontay Johnson from Pittsburgh.
Great. Fantastic. They finally, he got sacked 700 times last year, and they were like, Bryce, why aren't you our savior? Like, I hate when teams do that.
Not to mention Frank Reich losing his job partway through the year and all those changes with their coaching staff. Like, he was set up to fail.
Yeah, it's so tough for young quarterbacks to go in and be asked to save a franchise that doesn't have any talent around them.
Yeah, I think that's where it's frustration is that, you know, teams are just so quick to make moves and the expectations are so high. Like in the past, a Brett Favre could have a miserable rookie season. Peyton Manning could go 3-13. It's no big deal. Now you expect immediate results right out of the gate. And like you said, with Bryce Young, there's reasons why he struggled. But the nature of the beast right now is you want stuff to happen fast. So I give Sam Howell credit. I think he's got some promise and potential. And for Washington, you're right. They got some holes to fill right now.
Oscars, Julian, you want to get into some movie talk?
Yeah, I want to know how your ballot went for all the major awards at this past weekend's Oscars.
Yeah, 17 of 23, so that's pretty good. That's pretty good. About on par where I'm at. Yeah, unfortunately, David Sampson did beat me, the former president of the Marlins. He, myself, and my dear friend Ben Lyons, we did a 6.5-hour live cast on the Dan Le Batard YouTube page. So from 4 to 7,
so good,
we did the pre-show wearing our tuxedos. Oh, thanks, man. It was funny. We're in our tuxedos in a Miami studio. Exactly how you want to cover the Oscars, right? No, don't need to be on the red carpet in Los Angeles.
Same glitz and glamour, right?
That sounds like fun. As a Montreal guy, I can't co-sign David Sampson. You can understand that, though, right?
Oh, 1,000%. When somebody told me, they said, you have genuine animosity for him. I said, of course I do. I'm Canadian. Look at what he did.
Come on. I can't. I'm sure he's a lovely person to deal with. I just can't do it. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I completely co-sign. Anyways, yeah, it was a good night. The big one where he got me on, it was a coin flip, was Best Actress. Lily Gladstone is who I predicted because she had won the SAG. David correctly went with Emma Stone. That was a big win. And I do have to hand it to him. He had a pretty inspired choice on Best Sound, which I went Oppenheimer. And he went Zone of Interest. And if you've seen Zone of Interest, the use of the sound is really atypical and haunting. Although, as he said to me, it's a Holocaust movie. Let's be honest. Normally, the Holocaust films have always traditionally done very well the Oscars. And that marketplace, that demographic. So I got to give him credit. He got me in a couple of those. Overall, a decent night for me. And I enjoyed the Oscars. It's funny doing it, though, because you're doing a watch cast. As you guys know, it's like doing the Manning cast. So I'm watching it, but I'm not listening to a lot of it. I'm kind of missing a ton of it. So I covered the Oscars, and then I went home and watched the Oscars. So 2 days later, I had more thoughts on the matter. But I thought John Mulaney was hilarious. And I thought I loved the former winners coming out. That was easily my favorite part of the show. Lupita Nyong'o, just a wonderful moment when she was giving props to Davon Joy Randolph, who won the Oscar for The Holdover, said, in this movie, you wore your grandmother's glasses. What a treat to be able to see the world through her eyes and yours. Beautiful moment. You see Davon start crying. When she won, you see Giamatti with tears in his eyes. And, of course, my man Giamatti gets honored by Nicolas Cage, who had the funniest line when he said, actors will do anything in terms of characters. You know, Day-Lewis staying in character when he did Lincoln. For the role of The Holdovers, Paul Giamatti wore a soft contact lens in his left eye, which rendered him blind for the entire shoot. Would I have done the same thing? Hell yes. And the whole crowd starts laughing. He says, well, you were magnificent, Paul. Bravo. And, of course, Nick Cage famously had some teeth pulled for a movie called Birdie. He famously ate a cockroach in the movie Vampire's Kiss. So he's still the coolest guy on the block, and Giamatti really enjoyed and appreciated that moment. But unfortunately, Cillian Murphy wins the Best Actor. He obviously gave a heck of a performance. I'm happy for Oppenheimer as they win 7 Oscars. Poor Things is a lot of fun. That one, 4 Oscars, really strong night. I also was surprised by that upset. I had Barbie winning for production design, but Poor Things came through. But the big thing I was, of course, upset about, another loss for Scorsese. Killers of the Flower Moon goes 0-10, which is just abysmal. Like, it's a great movie. It should have won at least something.
Yeah.
And overall now, Marty's movie is 0-26. Silence, he went 0-1 for cinematography, 0-5, Wolf of Wall Street, and The Irishman 0-10. Hasn't won an Oscar for one of his films since Hugo, which is a great kids movie back in the 2011. So that part was disappointing to me. But again, not unexpected. Everyone knew it was going to be Chris Nolan's year, and it certainly was.
Thoughts on John Cena stepping out on stage in the nude?
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the few guys that could pull that off, right? And that's a very famous moment. David Niven at the Oscars, the host, there was a shrieker. So I like that they played that clip, too, for context, and then Cena was there. We're still trying to figure out if he was completely buck or not. I think he may have had a sock on his private areas. Who knows?
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, because I said, just in case, you can't risk it to be completely buck naked. But it was definitely a funny moment and a good moment. And I thought Kimmel I like a lot. He's very affable, but I didn't think his monologue was great. It was kind of indifferent to it. It wasn't particularly noteworthy. But he did get a predictable shot off at Trump, which he knew the audience was going to love. And he definitely makes things comfortable as the host. But I vote for Melania as host. I thought his Field of Dreams thing was hysterical.
I actually thought this was the best moment from the Oscars.
Only one will take the award for Best Picture. And I have to go to the envelope for that. And I will. Here it comes. And Maria, I see Oppenheimer. Yes. Yes. Emma Thomas, Charles Gordon.
What are we doing,
look,
Al?
Hey, look, look. He read the envelope and read out the winner. We're not that far off from that other year when the wrong winner was announced.
It sounds like a question.
Yeah.
My eyes see.
And my eyes see Oppenheimer.
So awkward. Everyone's like,
yeah. Are your eyes okay, Al? Sure. Okay, yeah.
I love that his publicist released a statement the next day saying it was not his fault in terms of not saying the other nominees, right? Normally, you say the nominees are,
yes,
and the winner goes to. But so people were thinking he screwed up, but no, he was instructed by the producers because they were so conscious of time. And I actually think it was a great move. Like Pacino, trendsetter. Like, you don't need to list all the nominees. You've watched 3.5 hours. You know that Anatomy of a Fall is up for Best Picture and Past Lives, etc. So they were so conscious of the start time. I love, by the way, the earlier start time.
Yes,
7 o'clock,
yes.
Eastern, 5 o'clock for you guys. Fantastic. It wrapped up for us 10:23 local, but it was. It was so quick. You could tell Kimmel was filling at the end. Like, he was like, hey, what else want to talk about? We still got some time here. He thanked his producer, his director, the crew. They don't have time for us. Like, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good night. So it was funny. They should have, I think, adjusted and said, all right, Al, you know what? Go ahead and introduce the nominees because they have the time. But you're right. As far as Pacino not saying, and the winner goes to, I mean, that's just Al being Al. My eyes see Oppenheimer. Okay, I guess they won. That's Pacino.
Good to see Robert Downey Jr. get some acclaim for a pretty cool career.
Yeah, and you knew he'd have a great speech. His line was hilarious when he said, I'd like to thank my horrible childhood and the Academy in that order. I don't think it's his best movie, but I think he's had an incredible career, especially as Kimmel was joking about his previous drug problems. The fact he got cleaned up, he's so madly in love with his wife, Susan, one of his producing partners. He's always giving her so many props.
He didn't look like he liked that little jab from Jimmy either.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think the first joke was okay, right? This is the highest he's ever been. But the next joke, I don't think he cared for it. He kind of got like, hey, let's move it along, okay? Like,
ooh,
let's not get three jokes at my drug pass.
Yeah.
But I would have loved to have seen De Niro one. De Niro was on Kimmel on Monday, and it was hilarious. Jimmy Kimmel said, what'd you think? And Bob said, oh, it's fine. He goes, Downey's a great guy. You know, he's fine. And Kimmel laughs. He goes, and I kind of feel like you wouldn't even care. Like, you don't even care if you win or not. De Niro laughs. He goes, well, listen, the nomination is what's important. He goes, when you get recognized by your peers, that's it. As far as winning, that's so subjective. It's, you know, it's whatever. So I in my head, I got more upset than I should have been. I said, listen, if De Niro doesn't care, I don't care. So he gets nominated again, and good for Robert Downey Jr.
Billie Eilish winning for Best Original Song, but I'm just going to say it. I think Ryan Gosling got snubbed. I'm Just Ken is really good.
I tell you, June, as far as the moments of the night, like I said, I think Mulaney's joke, the John Cena bit, but performance-wise, Gosling killed it. I mean, this guy is such a multi-talent, and of course a Canadian from London, Ontario, so that's a big reason why he's so good. But obviously effortlessly charming and dazzling and great singer, and you saw he was a song and dance man in La La Land, and it's a really funny song. Maybe it just would have felt odd, a movie about female empowerment. Their one Oscar would have gone to the guy singing I'm Just Ken. Maybe they didn't like that concept. But I agree with you. I thought his performance was great. And, of course, Billie Eilish, now a two-time Academy Award winner for, I don't think a great song, but it comes at a great part in the movie. So I think that makes sense why it won. But only one Oscar for Barbie. So they can take solace in the fact that they made $1.4 billion. They did not have a strong night at the Oscars.
And now we all get set for the Dune sweep of next year's Oscars, right? We've already got our winners set for next year. We don't even have to watch any movies this next year, Vern.
Well, it's pretty rare when a movie that comes out in March ends up being a juggernaut. But you're right, Dune 2 is going to get a ton of nominations, especially in the technical categories. The last one I could think of was Fargo. Fargo was a March release. That got 9 for Best Picture. 1, of course, for Frances McDormand for Best Actress. But, I'm sure Denis Villeneuve, again, fellow Canadian, will definitely be nominated with the way that Dune 2 has been received by the critics and by the audiences.
You're the best, man. Always appreciate you jumping on with us. Glad you had some fun times at spring training and great Oscars coverage. I loved watching it, but you knew I'd like that anyways, pal. So thanks again.
Thanks again, Logo. And last thing for Julian, while at the Blue Jays game, they did offer poutine, $9.50.
Ooh.
Might have been the worst I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
Oh, that price already was going to make me hesitant. Actually, let me get you on this. So how do you feel about that hot dog puts in that was going around last year?
I don't know. I can't really get behind it.
You have sense.
I just want the cheese, curds, and gravy, man. Let's just go old school and get it done.
You have sense. There's too many people, notably from Ontario, who were way too obsessed with that last year and just made complete idiots of themselves. I'm glad you have sense. Thanks so much, Adnan.
All right. We're on the same page. Thanks.
See you, AV.
Thanks, guys.
Adnan Virk joining us, the great one from MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast. Love having him on every Thursday. Just great to chat with one of the best guys in sport. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. More on the Flames and the Golden Knights. It's a Flames game day here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Yes, Logan Julian along with you on a Flames game day. The homestand continues Thursday night. Part of a busy NHL schedule, Julian. 12 games Thursday night.
Pretty packed.
Islanders, Sabres, Panthers, Hurricanes. Maybe a little playoff preview.
Panthers, Hurricanes looks like a real good matchup.
Senators, Blue Jackets.
Not as fun.
Coyotes, Red Wings.
Detroit's trying to get itself out of a hole, maybe.
An original six battle in Montreal, Boston, Montreal. I think that's still fun.
I think those games are good to be at live. And you never know in a rivalry matchup. You could be bottom of the standings, top of the standings. It doesn't matter. Every dog has its day in those matchups.
Sharks, Penguins at 5.
The Erik Karlsson game.
Yes, the Erik Karlsson game. That's a good point. Rangers Lightning, that could be a first round matchup for sure. That's on Sportsnet at 5.
That's a good matchup.
Leafs Flyers, big game for Philly as they're trying to keep pace in the East.
Still can't believe the Flyers have had the success they've had this season. And I was thinking about it the other day, but considering the fact that the Flyers are playing for the playoffs, playing well above what we all thought they were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Is John Tortorella, like, where does he rank among the Coach of the Year honors? Like, where does he belong in that discussion? And I get that, like, his job is to go to these teams and to squeeze out as much juice as possible to get them there. It's not like he hasn't done this before. But the fact that he's doing it again in that particular market, they're holding down a playoff spot for a Jack Adams honor. Is he not at least in the conversation? He's not in top three. Like, he's... Who else has done a better coaching job? Chris Knobloch, I can understand in Edmonton. You throw him up there in that discussion, but who else belongs in that conversation?
Yeah, he'd be in it. I think that Jack Adams sometimes is guilty of becoming the most surprising team that was coached by whoever wins. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily who did the best coaching job, but sometimes who kind of came out of nowhere and surprised a bit. So I think
Rick Tocchet too.
Rick Tocchet's in the conversation for sure. I'm thinking, you know, if you're in Boston, you have a hard time. You know, Jim Montgomery after losing Bergeron and Krejci would have to be in that mix as well. I think Rick Tocchet's a good one. Florida. Probably
Paul Maurice
would have to be in consideration, I think.
This team was just barely got into the playoffs last year, and they look like a world beater in the Eastern Conference this year. Man, that is going to be a tough race for the Jack Adams this year between Tocchet, Maurice. I still think Torts should get some consideration. But yeah, there's a lot of names you could throw in there.
Andrew Brunette?
Yeah. I mean, look at Nashville, the winning streak that they're on right now. The winning streak they were on the last few games and the point streak that they were able to continue with the win over Winnipeg last night. Like, that's a really good team.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. It's going to be a tough race there for the Jack Adams. You also have Stars Devils tonight at 6 o'clock. Ducks Wild from Minnesota. We're obviously focusing on the Flames and the Golden Knights, which will be on Sportsnet West. And your late game tonight, the Seattle Kraken host the Washington Capitals, who will be into Calgary next Monday for their lone visit for Alex Ovechkin and the Caps this season.
Mm-hmm.
Busy night in the NHL. And, of course, we're focused in here on the Flames. If you missed it earlier today, Dustin Wolf gets the start for the Calgary Flames. Noah Hanifin makes his return to Calgary as a member of the Vegas Golden Knights. It'll be Daniil Miramanov and Braden Pahal. First chance to play there. Former club tonight as well. Still no Connor Zary for the Calgary Flames. And we can tell you that Hunter Burstevich signed his entry-level contract with the Calgary Flames today as well. A three-year deal, $950,000 on the AAV. And I can tell you he'll join Pat Steinberg on Flames Talk this afternoon. So that's going to be good as well here from him after he signs his entry-level contract. But as we always do early in the day, we checked in with Noah Hanifin to get his thoughts returning to Calgary. Let's go back to the Flames locker room, hear more on a game day, checking in with head coach Ryan Huska, some adjustments to his lineup ahead of this matchup with the Vegas Golden Knights. The Flames look to end their three-game losing streak. Here's the head coach on a game day.
How weird will it be to see Noah Hanifin on the other side tonight?
That's the way it is. He's playing for another team right now. You know, it's like everybody else, that if you're part of trades, it happens. That's part of the business, so you move on.
Funny how the season or the schedule works sometimes, though, where you see him so soon after.
Sure. I mean, that's you, stuff you can't control. So it is what it is. I mean, this is his first game back, and we'll look forward to having a good game ourselves. That's the most important thing.
Urgency and energy kind of come up in conversations. Is that for you just as much a priority as the players have sort of felt that they haven't had that the last couple? And you need to respect what you've done.
I don't know if it's those things. Those things have to be present for sure. In regards to respecting the opponent, I think we just got away from what we were doing. And some of that may come to the fact that once that trade deadline's passed, there's a little bit of a letdown because that's an emotional time for guys. We had some travel that was in play. So it's important that the enthusiasm and energy comes from the right people and other people build on that. So for me, it's more about playing our game than anything else.
Rasmus has been pretty critical of his game of late. What have you seen and what do you want him to be like?
It hasn't been the best he's played, so I would agree with his assessment. Raz has to move his feet, and he's got to move the puck quick. And if he isn't moving his feet and not moving the puck quick, he's an easy guy to play against. So there's, when he's at his very best, he's got that, you know, like badger feel to him where he's moving. And because of his ability to see that second or third layer or who's open beyond those layers, that's what makes him a really good player. So it's for me, it's always about his feet. And when he's moving them and he's driving them, he typically will drive the play.
What's the mindset behind putting Wolf in tonight?
He's same thing as we've always talked about before. Wolfie's a really good goaltender. Danny's had a couple games lately where haven't been at our very best in front of him. So this is a chance just to give him a breather, and he'll get himself back in there right away.
When I look at, you guys have been really good against the Golden Knights the last couple of years. What has been the key to success against them?
There's a few things. I think, you know, when you're playing against teams that are the defending champions or looked at upon as elite teams, you measure yourself a little bit against that. And I think the way we play, I think we have an understanding of how they play. And I just go back to the players are being ready, and they get excited against teams like this.
We all know how good the Backlund, Mangiapane, Coleman line has been for this organization. But when there is so much change, you know, you look at the lineup, everything's different, but that line stays the same. Is there additional value in just having a line where those guys know what you want, they know what this organization needs from them?
Sure. Because they're leaned on in all those situations. So they are the guys. When you think of our last couple games that we haven't been happy with, their game hasn't been, and we didn't have Andrew, of course, last game, but it hasn't been to their level. And they're the line that when we need to start the game the right way, they start. When we need to shift momentum, they're the line that does it. So they have a chemistry amongst the three of them. They understand how we have to play to have success, and they're good with that. So it is nice to have three guys that have been together that long that play well together.
It's only been a few games, but what have been your impressions of Daniil Miramanov?
I've liked him. I think he's got good composure with the puck. He's made some good plays. I like that he's trying to shoot the puck as well. I think that's an important thing for our power play. And I think as we get going with him, we'll see his pace of play improve as well, because I feel like that's something that we've seen improvements in from his first game to his last game.
And after Jacob Pelche's sort of delayed takeoff this season, mm-hmm. and then another injury, how close is he to kind of
back to where you expect him to
be? Not right now. You know, I mean, when we feel like when he's at his best, I look at his actual first game back when he came and played in Boston. He had impact in that game because he used his speed and he showed a lot of no fear to his game, where he was good with being first to the puck, knowing full well that he may get hit. I thought he was strong in his battles. And over the last little bit, that part of his game hasn't been there. So we talk about older guys, what they have to bring. Younger guys have to do some things that show that they deserve to be a full-time NHL player as well. And he fits into that category.
Head coach Ryan Huska checking in on a game day for the Calgary Flames. Lots there with the head coach. Good assessment, I think, of Rasmus Anderson's play of late. Julian, you asked him about Daniil Miramanov, and I would tend to agree with the coach. I think you've liked what you've seen from him so far. He's trying to get pucks on net. He's trying to be that offensive threat. That's a very easy point to pick out in his game, and it's just a couple games in. I think the chemistry is still developing.
Yeah.
The understanding of the system and everything is still developing, but good to see some early positive signs always.
I think the fact I like the goal he scored the other day, just getting that shot off from the blue line, looked good for him. And I still would like to see a little bit more before I really form a proper opinion when it comes to Daniil Miramanov. I know we raved about his confidence earlier, but in terms of the on-ice stuff, I think he's just been okay. I'd like to see more of him, especially in some games where the team's not getting blown out and it's a little bit tough to kind of discern what to take from that team. But I think it's a better start than him not getting anything with this team. So yeah, I'm happy to hear Ryan's assessment of him was very enlightening. Hearing about his thoughts on Raz and Pelty as well. You know, look, this team needs better effort from some of its key players, but I mean, I think we're starting to see it now, but the fact that they don't have a Noah Hanifin on this team anymore or Chris Tanev, it's hurting this team at the knees, really. And with 17 games to go, with this game tonight, I mean, I don't know about you. We were talking about it off air, but it feels like there's some kind of finality to their season with this game. If they lose against Vegas, it'll be 12 points down on them in the standings. And yes, they have Montreal and Washington and all these other lower level teams after that. But that is a gigantic hill to climb for this team. You're not saying you're mathematically eliminated. Any team has a chance while you still have breath, but a loss against Vegas tonight really puts them further back. And in order for them to actually get that win, they need key performances from their key players, and they can't have a repeat of what they've gone through against Florida, against Carolina, and Colorado.
Well, and it just comes down to, and we've talked about this so long, even when the gap was much smaller, climbing over teams is just, it's so hard right now. Even look at the schedule tonight and teams that are going to play that are going to matter to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle's hosting Washington. Minnesota's hosting Anaheim. Like, there's, you know, all these teams around you that are going to make it so that you either don't gain any ground or perhaps you lose ground on nights like tonight. So, yeah, it's hard. You know, the Kings are in action tomorrow. So, you know, maybe you don't get close up to Vegas, but you're thinking, oh, maybe LA is the team to catch. Well, they're in action tomorrow, and they pick up 2 points. It feels like you're one step forward, two steps back. So,
yeah,
it's a tough spot for the Calgary Flames, and we knew this. Even when the gap was not as wide as it is now, I think most of us were talking about, you know, even 7 points, 5 points. It's just not easy in a three-point NHL world to climb over teams without a very extended run. And to be honest, they got to 5 games, and unfortunately for them during that 5 games, they didn't make up enough ground, and that's not
tough
on them. They won the 5 games, but the reality is the teams around them also won games, and that's just kind of the,
well, it's partially is on them part, because they were in that spot to begin with because of the way they started the year.
Sure, but I mean, they talked about needing to go on a run. They go on their best run of the season, and
it doesn't,
I think they lost ground.
Yeah, they did.
Right, like that's, and what I mean by that is it's, you need some good luck, right? It would be nice if somebody that you were involved with lost 3 games during that stretch, but it never happened, and it's, it's got to be frustrating for this group. We mentioned Rasmus Anderson. I want to play him before we get out of here on this Thursday, because he was very critical of his own play.
He was.
Going back to Tuesday, it's been a rough stretch for him, I would say, since the Noah Hanifin trade. He's been asked to do a lot on a pairing again with Oliver Shillington, we think, for Thursday. and a guy that's really looking internally during this time to try to find a better version of his game. Let's check in with Rasmus Anderson, his thoughts ahead of a game against Vegas on Thursday.
Yeah, it'll be different. I mean, I play with Hanny for almost my whole NHL career, so it'll be fun to see him again, and it'll be different playing against him, that's for sure. But, you know, he's a really good player, and Vegas got a good person and a good player.
What can you tell us about maybe his time here and like how important a guy he was here for a while there?
Yeah, as I said, really good guy. You know, you could always joke around with him, and you know, play with each other for so long, and you become really good friends. And I mentioned it before; it's always sad to see the person leave first, and then you know, he's a really good player as well. So it'll be different playing against him, but exciting at the same time. And it'll be fun.
Rasmus, how was he for your development, working alongside a guy like Noah?
It was good. You know, we're both pretty young, even though he's played a few years before me. We're both pretty young guys, and we played with each other for many years, and we had some good years together. And, you know, I thought we learned a lot from each other, and we understood each other really well on the ice. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun playing with him.
Did you get the chance to go for dinner with him or catch up with him?
No, I didn't, actually. I don't know if they came in or anything, and he probably had stuff to do around his house, I would imagine. So I didn't get to see him, but I'll get to him after the game.
Is it weird how the schedule works sometimes? You get to see him so soon already?
Yeah, I mean, I think the weirdest one was Sidorov, if I'm honest. That was the next game, and I think it was weird for him to be in the first game. So, you know. That's just how it works, and but as I said, Vegas got a good player and a good person.
Do you ever get used to that feeling of playing against guys you used to play with? Like, does it become routine at a certain point? Or?
No, not really. I mean, I'm still not used to playing against Chucky or Johnny, and they've been gone for a few years. Even, you know, seeing Gio in Seattle or Toronto, and especially, you know, the guys you play with for a longer time. You know, the guys who's just here for a year or two, it's different, obviously, but with the guys who you have been playing with for a long time, it's for sure a little special each and every time you play against them, because you're good friends, right?
I see you wearing the Strastrong t-shirt. Cause that's important to you.
Sorry?
Is it cause of an organization that's important to you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I saw the t-shirt before last game, and then, you know, I saw the video tribute, and it's phenomenal, the job he's doing, and he should be really proud of himself.
The match itself, when you look at Vegas coming out here, just you know, them fighting for the life, you guys still have that goal in mind as well. What does this matchup look like to you as you try to bounce back from games? I know you've been hard on yourselves, but just the idea of bounce back.
Yeah, you know, the bounce back is important, and I think it's important for, you know, the guys who have been here for a while, that we bounce back as a, you know, as a leadership group, and you know, just lead the team. And you know, I haven't been playing my best lately, so I gotta step it up too. And as you said, we're playing another really good team, so it will be a good night. And if we just stick to what we're good at and work them down, it will be a good matchup.
If I could, you said you are playing your best. What do you need to do to make sure you are?
I think I just need to have more urgency with the puck, without the puck, defend faster, and, you know, join the rush when there's an opportunity. I think, you know, maybe some games you're just focused kind of on the defensive side, and that's not my game. My game is all around, and I got to be more assertive and have more urgency.
Rasmus Anderson checking in from the Flames locker room on a game day. It's the Flames and the Vegas Golden Knights. That's what we've been getting you set for most of the program today. Logan Gordon, Julian McKenzie, wrapping up another edition of Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960. Dustin Wolf gets the start. Julian, get to see some new lineup combos for Ryan Huska, and a big game for the Calgary Flames tonight.
Yep. We talked about how seeing Dustin Wolf in that spot, how that could be part of the assessment for this year. We get it. The starts have been kind of up and down in terms of his placing with the team, but he needs those reps in order to get himself going as he goes on in his professional career. Obviously, a lot of attention will be on Noah Hanifin and how he's going to play in the game tonight against the Flames for the first time since he's been traded. Miramanov and Pahal playing against Vegas for the first time since they moved on from their previous club. There's a lot of different storylines to look at with the team. And also, again, as we were kind of alluding to earlier, just with the way this Flames team is falling further back into the playoff standings in their chase for the playoffs, it's looking less and less likely now with the chances kind of flowing down. It feels as if to me like if they still want to give themselves any hope, they need a win tonight. But if they don't, this, if it wasn't over already, you're getting a lot closer to that end game.
We'll find out what happens tonight at the Dome. We'll see you there. Julian, appreciate your time as always, pal.
Likewise, my man.
Julian McKenzie, my co-host on this Thursday, also covers the Flames for The Athletic, does a tremendous job there. Make sure you check out the latest from Julian. He'll be at the Dome on Thursday getting set to cover the Flames and the Golden Knights. If you missed anything from the program today, hour one was full of Flames and Golden Knights chatter. Heard from Noah Hanifin, checked in with the opposition and Ken Belke. Also, our Thursday chat with Adnan Virk in Hour 2, Oscar's reaction, MLB trade deadline stories, and more. All of it on a fantastic Thursday edition, if I do say so myself, of Sportsnet Today. Thanks to Connor and Shan, our outstanding producers, for their great work on this Thursday. Enjoy the Flames and the Golden Knights. We'll check in with you on a Friday edition of Sportsnet Today. It'll be on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.